Welcome to Business Infrastructure, the podcast about curing back office blues of fast-growing businesses. If you're a business owner or operator looking for practical tips and solutions to scaling your business in a sustainable manner, you're in the right place. Now here's your hostess, Alicia Butler-Pierre.
Hello and welcome to the Business Infrastructure Curing Back Office Blues Show. I'm your hostess, Alicia Butler-Pierre, and I'm joined today by a very special guest, Mr. Hassani X. Hassani started on the streets of Oakland, California to becoming a first-generation college graduate, earning an Ivy League degree from the University of Pennsylvania. He went on to found 4E Consulting, helping to grow hundreds of small to mid-sized businesses. After exiting 4E Consulting, Hassani shifted gears from developing businesses to building people as a performance consultant and leadership coach. He's now the CEO of Lead Your Story, a company that uses the power of story to build strong culture and brands. He's the father of three, a dedicated husband, and a modern stoic. Look, we all know how powerful stories are, not to mention memorable. And Hassani's going to share with us an example of how he uses story workshops to transform leaders, teams, and culture, resulting in business and brand growth. If you've done any type of marketing, I'm sure you've been asked the question, what's your story? So I'm especially looking forward to what Hassani has to share with us about that today. Hassani, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I am wonderful, especially after that glowing introduction. I feel like I'm the man right now, but
You are the man.
I'm great. I'm doing good. Yes.
You are the man. And actually, let's start with that because as I was preparing for this interview, I was thinking, I can't have him on here as a person who specializes in helping companies with stories and not have you tell your own story. So can we start off with you first kind of sharing your story of how you grew up in Oakland and from Oakland went on to graduate from an Ivy League school and start these different companies?
Yeah, sure enough. You know, I grew up in Oakland, California, as you mentioned, and you know, that's the Bay Area, California. And I grew up during the height of the crack epidemic. So it was a pretty rough environment. And I experienced all the things that go with growing up in the inner city and impoverished and things of that nature, the violence, the gangs, all the things that come with that. And just to give you reference, I always ask this question. My high school class started with 500 freshmen. How many would you guess graduated?
Oh, gosh. Half? Like 250?
All right. Good guess. 38 of us or so, right?
No way.
Yes. You know, and... just as a, you know, I remember my junior year, all the teachers were on strike and I met my wife that year. We played Uno the whole school year. I was Uno King and I got an A in that class. And that was my high school years. Right. But, I did manage to find a way to make a few decisions that led me down a path of going to school and getting a college education, being the first in my family to do so. Going to University of Pennsylvania, graduating with a degree in economics and sociology, and going on to start my own business straight out of school, like helping businesses to grow. And growing up, this wasn't something I never thought was possible. I never saw myself doing, but it was something that as soon as I was inserted into that environment and I could see what the ability to communicate value into the world looks like and that you could actually get paid for this, I was like, I'm in. I'm doing this for sure. So I graduate and I start a business and I'm doing great. Call 4E Consulting. We're helping businesses to grow. We're using the 4E's real quick. You got to have exposure. You got to get those sales coming in. You got to have efficiency. Don't break your back delivering those services. Third E, you got to have education. You got to be able to take the principles or the secret sauce out of the owners and turn it into systems, educate. And then the last E is being able to scale, being able to expand your business. So we were doing that in Southern California, me and a partner of mine from school, and we were crushing it, helping businesses to grow in Southern California. But I remember one day receiving a phone call when I felt like I was on top of the world. You ever felt like you nothing could touch you. Like you finally arrived. Mm-hmm. And I had one of those phone calls that came in, and it was my mother, and she was screaming and crying and hysterical. And she was like, they killed him. And I was like, Mom, what are you talking about? She's like, they killed him. They killed him. And I was like, what are you talking about? She was like, your brother.
They killed him. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there with, at the time, my youngest son was two. My son was two, and my oldest daughter was, I think, five at the time. And I was floored by the news. But what really punched me in the gut, at least it was the last conversation I had with my brother. And he told me straight up, he said, you weren't the brother I needed. You were not the big brother that I needed. And at the time, you know, I gave him as much lip back as he gave me. Like, no, it was on you. You saw what I was doing. You could have went to class. You could have went and did these things. It's not on me that you made the wrong decisions and went the wrong way. We grew up in the same neighborhood, same house, same opportunities. That was on you. And I had no gripes about it. But sitting there on the other end of this phone call, I finally got what he was saying. What he was saying was that I was so caught up in trying to succeed and do my thing that I didn't give myself over to being a leader, to actually caring enough to say, I won't do the work for you, but I got you, to encourage someone to actually lead. And I started to do, have you ever done an inventory on your whole life? Like really deep diving and seeing the patterns?
Yeah, it's not pretty.
So there I was on top of the world doing this inventory. And I was like, oh my God, this was a pattern that I had had my entire life. I punted on all jobs leadership. Like whether it was being captain of the team, they would vote for me. Nope, don't want to do that. Or being this, you know, a straight A student, you should be this. Nope, don't want to do that. I just punted on everything leadership. And I asked myself the question right before I gave his eulogy, where does that come from? Where does that come from? And I realized in that moment that it was out of my own fear of being responsible for someone else. And I didn't feel good enough to be able to give somebody, you know, advice or say, hey, this is how you do it. And I swore when I gave his eulogy that I would never again allow myself to succumb to that fear. And that any opportunity that came for me to lead, I would say yes. And the biggest jump, that was a pivotal jump in my life to transform me from building businesses to building people. I got out of the business development world and I went into building people as a coach, as a consultant. It was like, how do I help build people? How do I help people become that which they have been meant to be, that thing, the potential, their purpose, their why, their connectedness? How do I help to inspire or motivate to inspire and transform people so they can go out there and crush it in life? But I recognize before I can tell someone that they can do that, I first have to tackle my own demons, right? So that's when I started to do all type of crazy stuff. I became a professional fighter, got into a cage and fought because I was scared of physical violence. I got type of stories of that. That was crazy. Jumping out of airplanes. I'm scared of heights, getting to the ocean, you know, swimming with whale sharks. I don't like the oats. Like anything that any fear I felt, I would go and tackle it. I would go hit it head on. And then I would bring that same energy and ethic to my clients. So when we talk about my story and we talk about how I work with clients and I tell them that my purpose in life is to help people to fight through their biggest problems and fears so that they heroically break through. When I tell them that explicitly, they're like, I get it. Because everything you do is like, where's the monster? Let's go punch it in the face. Let's do the work. It really matters. That's my story. That's my ethic. And I bring that to every project I'm working on, whether it's helping to build culture or leaders working internally on growth or externally working with a company on trying to tell their story to the market. What part of your story did you face your demons, right? Did you face the things that made you who you are? And if we can tell that story to your team, to the market, watch people start to believe in your product and service like they never did before. And, you know, that's my story.
Wow. And what a story it is. And Hassani, I'm actually going to just pause the recording just for a few seconds. It's breaking up quite a bit. I'm going to change my headset. I'm not sure if it's on my end or your end. I'm going to go ahead and change my headset also. So let me just pause the recording. Okay, so Hassani, people have an inherent need to feel as though they're a part of something that's bigger than themselves. And after I looked at your website, which is phenomenal, by the way,
thank you.
It made me realize the importance of story. Because again, as I said in the opening, we're always asked, what's your story? Especially for those of us who get out there and we go on these different interviews on radio shows and TV shows and things like that. Everyone wants to know what your story is. But can you share with us an example of a time when you helped a client develop or use a compelling story to increase sales? Can you share an example with us?
Yeah, definitely. I'll use one of the most recent case studies we went through. I was working with a client. Her name is Ebony Looney. She's a web developer. And we know that in this modern age, you got to have a website.
Yes.
And our first company, 4E Consulting, we did a lot of website development for that exposure piece back in 2000. So I understand that game well, and we were able to talk the same language. But the challenge that she had was she came to me saying, it's hard for me to demand a premium and ask for what I think I'm worth in the market because everyone thinks that a web developer is basically a dime a dozen. And I said, unfortunately, that's one of the reasons beyond me changing kind of my focus in life. That's why I got out of that business too, because I saw the writing on the wall that it was going to become a commoditized industry. But I said, you're not out of luck here. You just have to focus on your story. And she was like, what do you mean? I said, listen, let's sit down and talk about why you do what you do. So we backtracked and went back to our early youth to find kind of these motivators that informed her of who she was today. And what we found was that back in the day, she was teased as a young woman, and she lacked confidence and she questioned her own beauty. And she remembers this kind of this pit moment where she recognized she needed to do something different. So she got in the mirror and she put on some makeup, and she said for the first time in her life, she was real young, she felt pretty. And from there, she became obsessed with making things pretty, with beautifying things.
Oh.
And I said, we need to tell that story. She was like, nah, I'm going to come off as a broken black child. woe is me. I said, no, listen, this is how you tell that story. It's not about woe is me. It's about you are obsessed with making things beautiful in the world so that people can not only appreciate their worth, but so that you can. And she started to tell that story, never mentioning websites or the features of her service. Just, I exist to help other African-American entrepreneurs. We tightened her market. We tightened who she was talking to, talked to a very specific person. And she said, listen, my story is this. I was broken. And I'm obsessed with the idea of making things beautiful again because I need to believe in myself before somebody else can believe in me. If you're a woman entrepreneur out there and you're struggling with your brand to make it beautiful, and that's the reason why you're not out there and you're not aggressively going after business, let me tell you, I understand. What you need is to find the beauty in your brand, and I can help you to develop that inside out. And she started to tell that story, again, not talking about websites. And sure enough, It sparked conversation. Like, girl, you speaking my language, right? Like, oh, how did you know I'm sitting here thinking this right now? And those conversations led to business outside of her local market. For the first time, she was landing business outside of her local network of people that she was talking to. She was now doing business at a national level from her story.
Wow.
From the features and functions of what she does.
Interesting, because I'm sure you kind of grew up learning the same thing that you always talk about, the features and the benefits of whatever your product or your service is. But you're saying focus on the story, which it sounds like it's really all about focusing on your why. Is that a safe assumption to make?
Yes. Now there are a multitude of stories, your origin story, the hero story, the client side story. There's all types of stories. So I want you to think of story as the foundation, right? You have a house, you have a building, you need to have a strong foundation. And that foundation is the ethic and the value and the why around what you do. But when you walk into a different room, there's different furniture, there's different arrangement, there's different things in that room, but it still sits on this same foundation. So while you may tell a great origin story like Ebony did in the example I gave, you may also tell a great client side story, but the ethic is still the same. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't go tell the client side story of how you transform lives by saying we made a website. You went right back to feature and function. You want to go to, I helped someone to develop a brand that was beautiful and that they believed in. And now, as a result of that, she's out here giving people her business card and saying, go to my website. She's proud of what she is. And that has encouraged her to go out there and be in front of her brand. So the story needs to be the same, the ethic. Like, mine's is hard charging, heroic breakthrough. We're going to push to do the hard stuff. And for Ebony, that was hard. For all of my clients, it's hard, but that's the story and ethic that I bring to the table. And I'm not saying anybody else is wrong for doing it differently. That's just my ethic. The client who wants to be handheld or kumbaya'd and soft pedaled and you know, it's going to be all right. And, you know, they don't do well with me. They don't even look my way. So your story should do two things. It should magnetize the people that are right for you to you. And it should also repel those who are like, you are not for me. So it's a why ethic thing, but it can be used in every aspect of your business, because you can motivate your team, you can motivate the market, you can motivate yourself at three levels with story: I, we, and us, as in building the tribe.
Well said. Now, you mentioned there's different types of stories. Could you repeat those again? I heard origin story, hero right. story. Were there some others?
Yeah. So you have the origin story, why you do what you do. You have the hero story, which is the transformation that you underwent that allowed you to become the person worthy of leading. So that's a story. You also have the client side story, where you talk about their journey and their transformation. And I'll insert something here for everybody out there who has a business. Gone are the days where we can just give kind of flat testimonies. All right. You know, Alicia is awesome and great. She's the best ever. Boom. No one believes it, because we can fake that information and we've become skeptical as a marketplace. We have to show the journey of how we transformed our clients' lives. So we have to show the before, and then we have to show the work that is done almost real time voyeuristically to get them the transformation, and then show the after state. If we can show that full circle story, which is definitely a story beginning, middle, end, not just the end, we can create more believability in our brand and our process. So you have that type of story. You have the stories that are there to help people to spark a paradigm shift. You know, maybe in your industry, people believe something that's contrary to them believing in your brand. So you tell a story that causes them to rethink how they think about things. So there are a multitude of stories. When I'm working with a client, the first thing we say is, don't say, hey, I just want to tell a story. What's your goal? Are you trying to win market share? Are you trying to enhance believability in your brand? What's the goal and what's the metric? And let's design stories that are as raw, authentic, and connected to who you are, and see if we can start moving the dial and getting you closer to that goal.
Now, if we were to tie this into business infrastructure, Hassani, and the way we define it is, it's nothing more than a system for linking your people, your processes, and your tools to ensure that your growth is profitable and sustainable. Considering that definition, who are some of the people, the processes, and the tools that you relied on to help that client, that web developer client that you were sharing with us?
Yeah. Well, from a infrastructure kind of foundational building block, I would say that as close to the three R's, raw, real, and relevant, the story can be, then it becomes a foundational item that you can build all aspects of your business on. A lot of people try to tell story from a aspirational perspective. This is who we aspire to be, right? You have a lot of people out there who companies who try to say, we're about the environment, or we're about women now that it's the right thing to say, or we're about treating our employees right. But that's not their authentic, true story. So when you try to build the infrastructure of your culture and mm-hmm. what you do around a story that isn't you, meaning it's something you aspire to be, you're building your foundation on something. You're building a foundation that's shaky, right?
Yeah.
So build on who you actually are, the truth, and then allow your leaders, your managers, your team, your staff to judge themselves according to that truth, and then share the outcomes, good, bad, or indifferent, with the team, with the market, et cetera, and so forth. Like, I think transparency in today's market is of the utmost importance. You can't hide anything. So telling the story from the inspiration, meaning who you are at your best, and then saying that you're an imperfect entity in person trying to live at a higher level within that story, which gives you room to fall, which gives you room to make a mistake. And if you build your culture and your leaders and your market presence based upon that, then you won't be so worried about what the market is saying to you. Think like Wells Fargo and all the times they've dropped the ball now and have lost market share, or Volkswagen in cheating on emissions. Like, you just can't tell a story that's not authentically true to you, because it will catch up with you.
That's so true. And, you know, what's coming to mind really quickly, I don't know if you've been keeping up with this story, but the story of Elizabeth Holmes and her company that has since failed. It was called Theranos. And at one point it was worth up to $10 billion, Silicon Valley, quote unquote, unicorn. And she had a great story, Hassani. The story was very compelling. She purported to have a device that could take a very tiny sample of blood, actually just from the prick of a fingertip. Mm-hmm. And from that one tiny blood sample, she claimed that her machine could actually run up to 250 different types of blood tests. Mm-hmm. And it turns out the whole thing was a charade. The machine did not even work. And in fact, they were using other companies' machines to actually do the testing. So you're right. The story has to be authentic, because in the end, it does catch up with you, and it caught up with her. You know, you actually brought up your three R's, and I'm glad you did, because it was something I wanted to talk to you about anyway, because I noticed this on your website, 3R communication. So is that kind of your methodology, the tool that you use to really help guide your clients in developing their stories?
Yeah. And I bring it right out. This is the first thing we do. The first thing we cover when we're in front of a client and their team is, here are our three promises. We're going to be as raw as we can possibly be, as real as we can be, and as relevant. And if we can't agree to that, then we need to just shut this down and need to think about going somewhere else. Because for me, if we can touch upon that, that's where all the juicy tidbits are. That's where we really find the truth that now becomes a very compelling story. Not something, see, a lot of people say, hey, I want to tell a story. I say, no, it's not about telling a story, because that puts the onus on you trying to figure out what to say. It's more like uncovering the most raw, real, relevant truth about what it is that you do and who it's for and why it's valuable and why you would go out and not only fight to make this happen, but to defend it and to uphold it and to be a caretaker and a warrior in this story, this idea of who you are. And when we can find that vein, we have something to not only stand for, but to fight for. So if you can imagine a team who is disconnected, and all of a sudden we find that thread that unites them at this level of humanness, true caring. Now you've brought together talent and resource and human resource at a level that goes beyond checking the box. People will give discretionary effort, you know, that effort that goes beyond the job description, because now they feel like they're part of something.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with the brands that we love. Like, you know, the biggest brands in the world have a story that create affinity and connection. And we will give those brands great latitude. Like, I'm sitting here with my iPad right now, and it decided that it wanted to install something that I didn't want to install. But I'm in the Apple ecosystem, and I'm going to give it that latitude because I love these things, and I'm not going to go through the evil enemy window. So when we fall in love at that level of what something stands for and what it says about who we are, we ride or die with it. And that's what a great brand does. Mm. It connects us to the story. It connects us to something beyond the function because we identify with it. It gives us status. It gives us a sense. It helps us to tell the world, hey, this is what I'm about. This is who I am, right? And if you can't do that, then you're a commodity or you're racing towards being a commodity. So in the space of building brand or culture, it's about finding a story that shares this raw, real, relevant truth around who you are, and then that magnetizes the people who believe that to come to you and pushes everybody else away.
Awesome. What lessons did you learn as a result of working with that particular client, that web developer that you were telling us about?
You know, I tell people all the time, your story matters. And sometimes a lot of people fight me on that, right? They don't believe that their story has relevancy. But I believe the smaller of a business you have, the even more impactful your story is in terms of getting those few people that you do employ to really buy in terms of getting those first movers in the market to believe in your service enough to give you a try. It's not going to be because you have a perfect product. Right? It's not going to be because of that. And in fact, if you're trying to create a perfect product, you're probably in a position where you have negative ROI because you're tinkering in the lab, you're babying your product and your service, and you won't give it to the world. I've seen so many entrepreneurs fail that way because they won't give their imperfect product to the world. But think about these billion-dollar plus companies. Do they give us imperfect products?
All the time.
All the time. And then they allow their best and most, you know, gung-ho users to test it and say, this is what broken, then they fix it and give it to the rest of us. So that's the iteration of finding a value proposition and testing it in the market. So understanding your story and what you're fighting for and what you stand for and why you think it's valuable, you'll get those first movers to give it a try. You'll get the first movers to say, hey, I believe that too, right? I'll give another example. A lawyer, you know, working within Hawaii. Say lawyers are, again, a commoditized thing. I can look in the, I was about to say Yellow Pages, dating myself. I can go online and look up lawyer and find one. But imagine a lawyer saying something to this effect. When I was young, my dad left, and you know, along the way, my mom fell into legal troubles, and we lost everything. And she was stressed and worried, and we lost our house and we were homeless for a while. And I swore that I would never, ever allow a legal system to take advantage of any other person as long as I live. That's the type of lawyer I am. And sitting down with a lawyer coming up with that in 15 seconds of just hearing the motive, I was like, imagine telling that story to someone and they're trying to choose a lawyer. Do they say, oh, I'm just going with any old lawyer, or do they say I'm going with him? And that has nothing to do with how good of a lawyer he is. It could be a
right.
He could be a piss poor lawyer. but the story says, I'm going to try it. So the story will get you a lot of runway. Now you do got to come correct. You do got to have a good product. You do have to have some staying power and deliver value. But for you small businesses out there, making a perfect product has a diminishing ROI. It's exhausting, first off, and once you put it into the market, it can be duplicated. Our widgets are not that special. But what is special is the brand we develop around that widget, around that service, and that is supported by a great story.
And that is a great segue or a great point for us to take this quick commercial break. And when we come back, Hassani, I want to know if you have some advice. Actually, you've been giving advice all throughout this interview, and it's been absolutely phenomenal. But if there's any additional advice that you have to share with us, do you currently have more business than you can handle? Do you need to hire more people but don't have processes documented to train them? Behind the Facade, How to Structure Company Operations for Sustainable Success is a book that explains step-by-step how to create business infrastructure in your company so that you can hire the right people to do the right things in the right working conditions. It's the world's first book ever written about business infrastructure exclusively for small businesses. Visit behindthefacadebook.com to get your copy today. That's behindthefacadebook.com. And we are back with Hassani X. Hassani, before that quick break, you were telling us about how you use story to help people solve this problem of client acquisition, especially within small businesses. And you were sharing two specific examples, one about a web developer and the other about an attorney, and how you really go through this process of helping them to not just discover, but uncover the real reason and the motive behind why they started their businesses in the first place. And as I'm listening to you, I'm like, yeah, I need your help because whenever people ask me, well, what's your story? I'll be honest with you. My very first response is usually, you know what? I'm boring. My story doesn't matter, because when you start to look at some of the really more dramatic or traumatic stories that are out there, you almost feel like, how do you compete? But after listening to you so far, you've really opened my eyes to, well, you know what? There's so many different types of stories that you can tell, and your story does matter. And there is something about your story that people can connect with. So thank you for that. What advice do you have for those who may be listening and they may also be experiencing, I call it the problem of anonymity, right? Getting people to first know who you are, yet alone what it is that you're selling. Any advice that you can share with us?
Yeah, I'll give it in two parts. One, I'll go back to, there are no irrelevant stories. It's just a matter of how you position the story and how you tell the story. And in comparison to all these dramatic events, I'll say this, you know, there are a lot of people who have been through near-death experiences and have come through some crazy odds. And the thing is, those may be magnificent stories to tell, but very few can relate. So you got to understand, a story also needs to be relatable, because in the business world, we want people to take actions toward fulfilling their own story. And if ours is way too out there and extraordinary, they'll feel motivated, but they may not engage in a transaction. So understand that. And then number two, understand that it's not always just about your story. A great story has four parts. There's a problem, a pain, and a pit, you know, some issue that the heroine or the hero has to overcome. And in that pit, they uncover some purpose, something that's beyond the pain. And then they uncover the path to power, some steps they take that are going to help them to get out of that pit, to realize their purpose. And then once they do that, they get some pleasure, right? Some reward, intrinsic, something internal that means something, and something external, like some pleasure, some prize, some money, some reward. So problem, pain and pit, purpose, power and pleasure. And if you really think about it that way, you don't have to go into theatrics around you. You can just really tell a story about whatever's going on in your life. And I'll give you another example. One of my clients owns a few melting pot restaurants. And we were sitting down, and I'm working with him on leadership and growth internally for his team, his managers, and his staff of about 50 people across his restaurants. And he says to me, hey, X, you know, my daughter, this was just last September. My daughter is, she just turned 17. She started school again. She's working at Publix. And he was like, man, it feels like I'm losing her. And I was like, you should tell that story. He was like, what are you talking about? It has nothing to do with restaurants. I said, but it does. You just have to reorient the story back to restaurants. I said, how many fathers out there are disconnected from their daughters right now? Legions of them. And then he said, we used to come to the melting pot and have all this great time together. So what do? We captured a story about daddies reconnecting with their daughters. He went first. He was raw, real, and relevant that he was guilty of being disconnected from his daughter. Then he started to do something about it. He invited other dads out to have a daddy-daughter date at the restaurant. We captured the dads and their daughters coming and their testimony around that, and that became a story. not a marketing ploy around come and get $10 off today or, you know, some Groupon value pack thing. No, it was a story that made dads go, oh my God, that's me. And they were like, I got to connect with my daughter. Where can I do that? The Melting Pot. There wasn't even a specific offer to come in. It was just a story we told. So story is about getting people to feel. If you just put that in the back of your mind, will people feel this? If they don't feel it, then it's not a story. So the most mundane thing can be turned into something that people feel. You just need a process to orient the story toward it, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense to me, especially because of the fact that you use the word process, which I'm very clear on the fact that, you know, it would definitely help to work with a person like yourself who specializes in this specifically, and because you've done this with so many different clients, you have your own process and you can help take other people through that process to get to that very compelling story that will get people to feel.
Yeah.
Hassani, can you share any resources that you would recommend for people who are looking to develop their story or come up with their story? There's a book that I have in mind, but I'm curious to know if you would mention that book as well.
Yeah. I mean, I've studied with all the greats in this space. So, and actually have trained with them. So, you know, from Simon Sinek and Why, Start With Why. You know, I've spent a good amount of time, resources, training in that system. Donald Miller's Story Brand, great book. He has a workshop on story. And even Bo Eason. A lot of people don't know about Bo Eason, but he really helps people to connect to their hero story and be able to tell it from a stage. So there are a variety of resources. If you just even Google how to tell my story, you'll find frameworks and processes galore. And I'm all about encouraging people to become informed, but I'm also real about this idea that information that sits on us and with us and isn't executed is like bloat. I tell my kids all the time, don't consume something without going out there and create, right? Your consumption to creation ratio, you need to keep that in check. And that again is the disease that many of us as entrepreneurs and small businesses have. We consume, and we don't go out there and create with it. So,
yes.
So whatever framework that you do use or resource you do use, put the onus on yourself to do something with it. And I think that's the benefit of having a coach and a partner to be able to say, hey, you got a process. Now let's execute. Let's implement. Let's do it. Let's get this done. Let's get a result. So now we know where to adjust and where to apply ourselves.
Right.
And that's the virtuous feedback loop of consumption, bringing it in, and then creating and putting it out there.
Yes. Having that accountability partner is so important
to
making sure you actually get it done. So the book that I was thinking of, I think it's called The Hero's Journey by Joseph Campbell.
Yeah. I read that. It's a great book. Great process, great framework. And I've studied all of those and tried to simplify it down to the most bare essential parts of those four parts. If I can get you to talk about a problem, purpose, power, and pleasure, you can have the raw ingredients for telling a great story. All of those frameworks are basically the same. They just have varying levels of complexity in terms of how you get to that root. And I try to be as simple and to the point as we can. We can sit down within a few minutes and have a really good working story just going through that framework.
So for people who are listening, I'm sure they're definitely going to want to know, how can I get in touch with this man? He definitely can help me, definitely can serve as my accountability partner. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, you can go to leadyourstory.com. Right now we're doing a overhaul of our brand, but leadyourstory.com, you can get in contact with me. I'm active on social media, specifically LinkedIn is my platform of choice. And we have a new service that I'm testing and I just launched because all of my clients are asking for it. And it's called Video Day with X. And in that day, we not only are going to help you to craft the story and to get your message correct, we're going to create some actual videos, help you to capture those videos so you have some material to share. And not only that, we'll train you on how to create your own videos using story on a day-by-day basis so you have content to put into the marketplace. videos are so important in this day and age. More video has been uploaded in the last 30 hours than it has in the last 30 years of broadcast television. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Wow.
So if you don't know how or you're uncomfortable with putting out videos that have compelling messages and story, you're falling further and further and further behind the curve. So they were asking me, and now we have it. So if you know you not only want to learn story, but you want to capture your story and be able to share it and learn how to do it yourself, then I invite you to go to Video Day with X. And Video Day with X. And
is that a website?
Yeah, Video like Day. That? Yeah.
Okay.
VideoDayWithX.com. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And you'll have a whole day. I fly out, you, your team, whomever, we create the story, capture the story, and then we work on a communication strategy for you to use that story that we helped you capture and to be able to do it on a day-by-day basis as a business owner, as a key stakeholder in your business.
Well, there you have it, folks. This is a wealth of information. I certainly learned quite a bit on stories. Sasani, thank you so much for taking time out to share all of your knowledge and expertise. And those were really great examples that you shared earlier. So thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay. And so now I want to talk to you, the person listening to this right now. Can your company also benefit from changing its narrative or developing a new compelling story that can improve culture, clarity, and connectivity? Here's a recap of how Hassani was able to do that for one of his clients. He talked about taking an inventory of your life and looking for patterns and trends. He also talked about finding motivators to figure out what really drives you. And in doing that, it's actually going to help you better define your target market. This was exactly what he did for that web developer that he told us about. He also spoke about the importance of your story having an emotional appeal. He mentioned that we should think of our story as our foundation, and there are different types of stories. But no matter what type of story you tell, show up and be your authentic self. Remember, stories are about getting people to feel. Your product does not have to be perfect. Just get it out there. This was great information. If you want to learn more about Hassani and his company, Lead Your Story, definitely reach out to him. You can find him at leadyourstory.com. He's also very active on LinkedIn. I think Hassani X, right? That's just how they would find you on LinkedIn.
Yes, Hassani and last name X.
Perfect. And also check out videodaywithx.com if you'd like to have him spend the day with you, helping you figure out what your story is and how to capture that on video. We will have links to all of the information that Hassani shared with us today in the show notes at businessinfrastructure.tv. There you'll be able to subscribe to the show as well as download this episode for future reference. And while you're there, don't forget to let us know your feedback. Again, you can do all of this at businessinfrastructure.tv. Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, stay focused, be encouraged. This entrepreneurial journey is a marathon and not a sprint. Until the next time.
Thank you for listening to Business Infrastructure, the podcast about curing back office blues with Alicia Butler-Pierre. If you like what you've heard, do us a favor and subscribe, leave a rating and review, and more importantly, share with your colleagues and team members who could benefit from the information. Join us next week for another episode of Business Infrastructure with Alicia Butler-Pierre.